Welcome to the Food Professor Podcast, Season 3, Episode 26. I'm Michael LeBlanc.
And I'm the Food Professor, Sylvain Charlebois.
Well, Sylvain, how was your long weekend? We're just coming out of the May 2-4 weekend. Now, when I was young, that meant you'd get a case of beer, a 2-4.
That's right.
And celebrate the weekend. It means something different. 24 hours of yard cleaning is what it meant for me. How was your weekend?
Oh, it was lots of yard work, of course, and some barbecuing, thanks to the inspiration I got from your show, your YouTube show, Last Request Barbecue. It was great. So it made some nice ribs. But the one thing I didn't hear this weekend that typically I would hear on May 2-4 weekend are fireworks. I didn't hear any of them. Typically, we hear fireworks all over the place, but we didn't hear any of them. So people were very careful. I think it's because of how dry it's been across the country, including here in Nova Scotia. So people are concerned. So they've been very – people have been safe and very responsible. So that's not necessarily bad. But we took it easy, and it was a nice weekend, but very cool. Very cool this weekend. Yeah, the highest mark we got was, I believe it was 14 degrees.
Oh, very, very cool on the East Coast. And there's an article in the Globe and Mail about how dry it is in the Atlantic provinces with the potato farmers are saying usually we're worried about too much moisture, but this year we're in the balance of a little too little moisture. It's pretty dry there. Interesting.
Yeah, with some irrigation, you can get your way out of a water scarcity problem, but you need the equipment, it ends up costing more, right?
And it hasn't been typically the problem, right? So you may not have that equipment on hand because water's been more the issue.
In the prairies, actually, you can see, I mean, if you drive around, you'll see many farmers do have the equipment because they've seen many, many dry spells. But in the Maritimes, you don't really see many irrigation systems out there for potato growers, unfortunately. So hopefully we'll get a good summer. And I mean, even in the U.S., I was looking at crop reports. It's been really dry for the Midwest. So they're planting right now, but they won't have any moisture for the next 10 days, like until early June, which is not great when you're planting. You need moisture a little bit.
Speaking of weather, I mean, on the other side of the spectrum, all that rain and now the snow melt in the California, state of California, there's these wildflowers just blooming. You can see them in space, apparently. Have you seen some of those satellite photos? It's incredible, really.
No, it is. Mother Nature has her way to make herself noticed. And farmers are the ones that do notice her.
They notice it right away.
And every day, like I listen to crop reports every single morning, and every single morning there's always a story around the world reminding you of or us of how powerless we all are, really, with climate change and weather patterns. And when you're growing stuff, when you're growing food, you're really at the mercy of that agenda, unfortunately.
All right. Well, on this episode, a very special guest is Shivani Jamaji, spice queen and owner, CEO of Shivani's Kitchen, right from Halifax, right? How did you come to know of Shivani?
Well, I saw an article about her, and she started to do business with Sobeys, the number two grocer in the country, and I was just impressed, and I was impressed with her story, and frankly, I think Shivani's Kitchen is the future, or part of the future, anyways. I think we are expecting to see more ethnic foods, and frankly, she's actually bringing to the market something that's been missing. But I'm really looking forward to hear her comments about spices and her interpretation of how Canadians like the love-hate relationship that Canadians have with spices, generally speaking. Yeah. So we're not known to like hot dishes. Some people do, but most Canadians don't necessarily enjoy hot dishes. So it'll be interesting to actually hear her thoughts about that.
Well, I think it's interesting. You even equate spicy with hot. I mean, that's just kind of our framework, whereas I sometimes think spicy is flavorful. So anyway, it's really interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're gonna the folks are going to love the interview because it a little glimpse into it, you know, one of the things you said, boy, it's tough to, you know, it's taken me a long time, years to figure out you know, the distribution center systems into groceries. I'm like, oh my God, people spend their entire careers trying to figure that out. So you're doing really well. All right. Well, let's jump into the news. So let's start with this AI report that is released today from the lab. And, you know, AI comes up in our conversations very often on the podcast. And of course, now thanks to ChatGPT and other things, it's coming up in the conversations around many kitchen tables, so to speak, for many Canadians. What did you want to learn and talk about the survey? What you learned?
Well, I mean, it's been out there for over 6 months now. We're seeing AI being retailed to all of us for free, right? We have access to AI. We can appreciate what it does, and we've seen a lot of conversation about AI and how it's going to impact markets, how it's going to impact different sectors of our economy, but no one has actually looked into how AI could impact the food industry. And that's what we did with this survey, with the support of Cattle, our great partner at the lab. And honestly, based on results, I got to tell you, Mike, you saw the report. I mean, a lot of people are still confused about AI. They just don't know what to think of it. Mm-hmm. We did ask the questions about, you know, about fear and about jobs and privacy. And frankly, I mean, basically a lot of Canadians out there are concerned about how AI could impact the food industry, how it could impact them as consumers as well, whether it's at the retail store, grocery store, or at the restaurant.
Mm. So it feels like, you know, reflecting on the study, it's like a free-floating anxiety. As I agree, not everybody even understands what AI is. Sometimes I don't. I mean, what's the difference between computer programming and AI? Like, we don't want to get into that too much into the podcast. But I think definitions matter. And, you know, I like the way the survey was done, because it's also taken the pulse of what people know about AI. And you know, it can take on this veneer, if I could say that, of danger. Or risk, but you know, historically, any new technology has created more jobs than, you know, cost jobs. But did you get any sense of that? And particularly in the food business, which really, you know, you've got CRISPR, you've got all kinds of very advanced technologies. Do you? A positive outcome for the food industry.
The paradox with AI in the food industry is simply this: farmers have been in this game for a long time. I mean, decades. Mm-hmm. They've been using AI, digital technologies for many, many years. And what we're starting to see, especially since COVID, is the rest of the food industry is starting to catch up. As you know, Michael, we've talked about this. It's a very traditional sector. Lots of family businesses. They don't like to break something that's not broken. They focus on recipes. But now there's so much pressure. Costs are certainly one, the weather, labor, and there's lots of things going on right now, and companies are trying to cope with some of these pressure points, and they do see AI, robotics, automation, all these things happening all at once. They do see all of these options as solutions. And so this week I was giving a talk about plant-based foods for Plant-Based Foods Canada, and you know, often we think of AI as just, you know, as ChatGPT, basically, you know, some sort of digital assistant. But wouldn't it be wonderful for a company to know when someone will turn into a vegan before that person actually knows it? Hmm. As an example, how would you like, as a brand holder, to know when your consumer is about to drop your brand without that person knowing him or herself? AI.
So that's so interesting, because and to unpack that for the listeners not perhaps as versed in it, AI is a massive prediction engine in one context, certainly the context you're using.
That's
it's about forecasting, right? So there's breadcrumbs, if I can use that term, that people will leave that look like they would lead to making a change in their eating patterns. But they're hard to pull out. They're hard to get to.
But it's not about just eating. It's about clicks on computers. It's about where you look. It's about behavior. It's about choices.
What you start buying.
What you buy. There may be a strong correlation between people who actually wear a suit and people becoming pescatarians, for example.
Oh, interesting.
So all of these correlations, these regressions are being done in deep learning, allowing computers, allowing systems models to predict behavior, predict choices, and frankly, to deal with black swan events in the future, as we did back in March of 2020, mm-hmm. I actually think that the food industry has to really deal or we'll have to learn how to deal with these events much more so than before. And when you think of logistics and when you think of supply chains and all these things, look at the weather right now in many parts of the country. It's either too hot or too cold. Well, when you're retailing food, how do you predict behavior? Like it was May 2-4 weekend last weekend. If the weather's cool, people may not buy as many beers, many soft drinks. So how do you actually predict how people will behave and what they will buy? So, and that's dollars. That's a lot of money for companies.
So that's AI and
news
and
you can use, man.
There you go. Talk about compelling. That gets us up in the rankings.
That's right.
let's if anybody wants a really great explanation of AI in one sense, page back to our interview with Grocery Shoppies founder Katie Holtz, who's like a data scientist and is applying that to figure out what recipes people need. That's a great interview. All right. So big news coming out of the States, and I'm not sure how it affects agriculture, but everything affects agriculture because in the States, it's
everything that happens in the States affects everything else.
And everything affects, you know, as they used to say, you know, when America gets the sniffles, Canada catches cold. So the debt ceiling may, who knows, by the time this goes to air, we're recording this on Tuesday, may be resolved. But what are you thinking about the debt ceiling and is there any agriculture food implications of these debates and discussions happening in the U.S.?
Well, I don't think it will be resolved by the time we go live. But I mean, the debt ceiling discussion is always fascinating. It's like Groundhog Day, you know?
Seems to be.
The debt ceiling argument was politically created in the U.S. just to actually have this going on. It's the only country in the world with a debt ceiling.
Because there's not enough drama on a day-to-day basis.
I mean, Canada borrows more and more and more and more. And so it's just a reminder to Americans and the rest of the world that America is actually going into more debt. And it's basically going to raise – I think it raised the debt ceiling 74 times in the last – 100 years or something. So it's just one argument, but to me, it brings more uncertainty to the market that is absolutely unnecessary, really. I mean, it's lots of noise. People are concerned. But it goes to show, I mean, China's grip on America's debt is quite significant. I think as a foreign lender, I think China's number two after Japan. And so that tells you, and so obviously I suspect that America will borrow even more from China, which shows you that this paradigm of seeing America buying and China selling is slowly coming to an end. I think there's going to be a new world order as a result of seeing America borrowing more and more and more. That's really what's going on right now.
Okay. And a lot of that, of course, dollars goes into trade, and a lot of that trade is in the agriculture sector. So if we all connect the dots. Speaking of Tuesday, it's Tuesday we're recording this. There's a big bun fight happening, or should I say taco fight happening, about who owns the rights to Taco Tuesday. Have you heard of this?
No.
Only
you would know.
So a particular restaurant says we have Taco Tuesdays and that's ours. And there's a big fight about who can say and who owns Taco Tuesdays. Is it owned by one person or did it get created? Anyway, it just popped into my mind as we were talking about Tuesdays.
Is there a copyright for that? Or
yeah, well, this is the fight, right? That there could be a copyright for Taco. Can you copyright Taco Tuesday? Let's talk about farmers markets. So you were talking about it on social media. I have my perspective about farmers markets.
What do you think about farmers markets?
Well, let's just talk about them for a bit, and then I'll share you what I think about what happens at farmers markets. So I'm not a big fan.
Do you want to know what happens at farmers markets?
Well, you know, what I found was super interesting was you did some numbers around farmers markets per capita, basically, across Canada.
Well, the reason why I did that is that Nova Scotia last week all of a sudden was claiming that Nova Scotia has the most farmers markets per capita. And I just wanted to know if it's true. And so I basically started to look at, you know, the number of farmers markets, registered farmers markets, let's be clear, because of course there are some that do exist but are not registered. Sure. And I looked at all provinces, and Nova Scotia is actually number three. But what's really interesting is that the Atlantic, except for Newfoundland, they all have a lot of farmers markets for their population. And Ontario is actually last.
Yeah.
One farmers market for every 90,000 people, which really didn't surprise me given, you know, how urban the market is. And, and frankly, I mean, the two farmers markets that everyone knows in Ontario is St. Jacobs, which is the largest in the country, and St. Lawrence, which is probably arguably the most well known.
I thought you were going to say I'd add a third, which would, since I'm from Ottawa, I'd say the Byward Market in Ottawa is a pretty famous.
That's another good one. Yeah, absolutely. But I would say that really the relationship people have with farmers markets in the Atlantic is very different than what I experienced when I was in Guelph. When I was in Guelph, you went to St. Jacobs for a day and you basically emptied your pockets. It was very expensive. But here, we're actually doing a study right now at the lab, and early findings are basically telling us that prices have actually barely changed in 3 years at farmers markets in the Atlantic. So they are actually seen as affordable options. Whereas in Ontario, you know, when you go to St. Lawrence markets or the Byward market, I mean, it's almost seen like an elitist experience. I mean, St. Jacobs has five hotels right next to it now. For people coming from Toronto.
Yeah, yeah. It's a day out in St. Jacobs.
It's a day out or a weekend out. Yeah.
And for the listeners, St. Jacobs, also the home of Home Hardware, by the way, is what, about an hour and a half, not quite an hour and a half from Toronto. So it's a bit of a hike. It's a journey. And there's a lot of things.
When's the last time you've been?
To St. Jacobs Market? 25 years, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Long time.
When I was in Guelph, we went there probably every 2 months.
Now, just to put some numbers to what you've been saying. So on one end of the spectrum, Ontario, one per 90,000 people. PEI, which is leading, is one per 16,008. So and New Brunswick, 21 to 20,000, 21,000. Nova Scotia, 1 to 25,000. So really an order of magnitude different. Now, I don't mind farmers markets that allow farmers to sell. I mean, when you go to the Byward Market, I think what they do is very smart. You get a license that tells people you're a farmer. What drives me crazy in my local little farmers market is I can't tell who's a farmer and who's just goes to the
reseller.
A reseller. And the farm, when I talk to the legitimate farmers, they hate it. But so I don't know. I think it's very deceptive. Farmers market isn't really. I get that farmers don't, and particularly now, have much variety in their assortment, and they may go find some other things to bolster their early crop of, you know, an Ontario asparagus. But you know, getting a truck going over to the central, you know, distributor of fruits and vegetables and buying a couple of pallets and showing up at a farmer's market, I don't know. I think it's close to or at fraudulent. I'm going to just go shop at a grocer's. Like, I don't get it at all. I think it's very deceptive marketing.
I have a story for you about St. Jacobs.
Hmm.
There's Mennonites there, of course. It's owned by Mennonites. So we always bought our honey there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to one of the kiosks and said, listen, how do I know it's not, you know, adulterate, diluted, or you put something into it? Well, we have special inspectors at our farm. And he said, really? And then she pointed at the sky. I mean, so their conscience was really the CFIA for them. You understand? So I thought it was actually quite a cute answer to my concern. I mean, really, as a consumer, because we were hearing a lot about food fraud and
sure.
And do we know that the stuff being sold at farmers markets is safe? You know, so
do we? I don't know. Do we? I mean, listen, I trust the grocers. If there's a problem with lettuce that comes off the shelf real quick, I don't know. Does that happen at the farmer's market?
Well, local or something being sold at farmer's market doesn't mean it's safer or of higher quality. It's just, you know, it's a different experience. I've always seen that as a different – I mean, we just love farmer's markets. I mean, some farmer's markets actually have – like a formula to sell food. I mean, you can't really leave empty-handed. I mean, there's actually one farmers markets in Val David in Laurentians, close to our cottage. There are chefs cooking in the middle. You have people attending, and so the chef will go, "Well, I got these spices from that kiosk over there. I got my beef from that kiosk over there." Yeah. So, guess what happens when he or she's done? People Beautiful. Just go and buy the Love stuff.
It. Love it. I don't know. Maybe it should be renamed. Maybe it should be urban markets or something. Because anyway, maybe that's
or public markets or something like that. Yeah. Anyway. No, I agree. I mean, the farmers thing is perhaps a little bit a bit of an overreach for some, for sure.
Well, I think it's a very destructive pattern. I think people start to figure it out. I haven't gone to my local farmers market around here in Mississauga in years. I gave it up because I'm not playing a guessing game about who's real and who's not and who's just reselling me stuff I can go buy at Longo's or Sobeys or Metro.
Yeah.
Why would I even bother? Anyway.
But by the way, I mean, for immigrants, farmers markets are really ideal to start a business. I know a lot of immigrants who came to Canada, couldn't get a job. They actually started to sell their own food from their own country. And I believe that Shivani actually started that way at the Seaport Market in Halifax. So I am a fan of farmers markets just because it provides an opportunity for people to connect with consumers directly, whether they're a farmer or not. And sometimes you do see some innovation happening as well.
Sure. I guess my advice to anybody running a farmers market is, which is my advice.
Be transparent.
Be transparent. Don't hide. And that's where I love the Byword Market, who says if you're a farmer, you're not. You can make your choice. You can shop from who you want, whoever they
are.
All right. Well, enough. We've beat that one enough to death. Let's let's get to our interview with Shivani, the spice queen from Halifax. And
Yummy. Speaking
of someone starting a whole new venture and being very successful, let's hear her story.
Well, joining us on our podcast today is Shivani Damija, owner and president of Shivani Kitchens. So happy to have Shivani join us this morning. Welcome to our podcast.
Hey, thank you, Simon. I appreciate you calling me to your podcast.
I read your story in a newspaper a few weeks ago, and I was so impressed by your story. For people who are not aware of your business, tell us about your business, about how you created Shivani's Kitchen.
Okay, so Shivani's Kitchen is actually the producer of ethnic products. So we do ethnic spices, ethnic sauces, and ethnic ready-to-eat meals. How this, I'll tell you how the name came up with Shivani's Kitchen. So in 2014, when I wanted to start this business, I actually wanted to call it homemade food or Indian food services or something like that. And every time I called the registration company and they used to reject my name, they used to say, is like home food delivery available? He said, no. They said, this is all, no. They said, is Shivani's Kitchen available? And they said, yes. I was like, okay, let's do that.
What inspired you to start a food business focusing on Indian cuisine in the province of Nova Scotia?
When initially I came to London in Ontario, and then I moved to Nova Scotia in 2012. And so Nova Scotia was always my home. So I didn't think that Indian cuisine should be started in Nova Scotia or should it be in PEI or should it be? I only had one option, which is Nova Scotia. So what inspired me is my story is very similar to other immigrant stories, I think, that we land up here, we have big degrees, but we don't get jobs. So that was exactly my story. So I came with a master's degree and I landed up as a customer service at a rec center. And I wasn't satisfied with what I was doing. So one of my friends, she was leaving for Toronto and she came and asked me, can I make some Indian food for her brother? And I said, sure, I'll make food for my family. Why not for your brother? And it'll give me some extra cash. That's it. And that's where I used my master degree. Like I had this public relations skills and the media skills. So I used those skills in my business. I was never a professional cook. I knew how to do marketing.
Wow.
I think that's what I know how to make food for my husband, for my kids. That's all I knew. And whatever I learned from my mom and my aunts and my mother-in-law. So I learned and I taught everyone in Nova Scotia.
Well, it's such an interesting journey. I mean, when you said you had a master's, I thought, oh, you finally get to use your food science degree, but you have a marketing degree. So that's super interesting. So before we kind of get going with a few other questions, just tell us about so the listeners understand, what is the product line? I'm on your site. I see you have fresh, prepared, and frozen. Have I got that right? Just give us what kind of products you make, just so people can, in their mind's eye, imagine what your product line and company makes.
We started with ethnic spice blends. So if you want a good garam masala, which is a must in Indian pantry, you will find Shivani's garam masala. Then you have butter chicken spice if you want to make your life a little bit easy. So there are different spice blends, garam masala, butter chicken, vindaloo, curry, all these spice blends. That's how I started my journey. But recently we understood that just with the spices, like Indian food for me to make it is like only 30 minutes. That's it. I'll put some veg curry. I'll put dal in front of me. I'll make rotis and it's done in 30 minutes. But for someone else who hasn't touched Indian food, it's very difficult. So we brought convenient solutions for them. We made ready to eat frozen meals. So now if you want to have Indian food, but you don't have time to make it, you can just go to a store and pick up Shivani's Kitchen authentic Indian meal. So butter chicken and rice, chicken curry and rice, chickpea curry and rice. So these were the three. These are the three which we have recently launched in Sobeys and some smaller stores.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, now you're in Sobeys. Let's talk about where you get and how you ensure the authenticity of your products. So, you land here, you're in Nova Scotia. Where do you go? Where did you start? Where did you find your garam masala? And what's different about it that I couldn't buy on the shelf? Like, talk about how you go and source the products that ultimately become part of your Shivani's Kitchen.
Yeah, so, okay, you can find anyone's garam masala. Finding garam masala is not a very difficult job, but the garam masala, there's a difference between our product and their product is, number one, we source the whole spices. So garam masala, it means a blend of different spices. So it is a blend of green cardamom, black peppercorn, coriander seeds, and everything should be in equal proportion. You cannot make the cheaper spice like cinnamon sticks more and make it cinnamon flavor. Everything should be in equal. So that's what our garam masala is like my mom used to make. That's only how I know how to make. So we brought. And then again, the other thing is we don't add salt to our garam masala because I never saw my mom making garam masala which has salt in it. Salt is something if you person A needs 20 grams of salt, they add 20 grams of salt in their Indian food. So that's the difference. And then we also make it in smaller batches. I remember my mom, whenever, let's say chana masala, so she was making fresh chickpea curry, every time she used to make fresh garam masala. One of the reasons was she didn't know how to store the garam masala in an airtight container so that there's no aroma getting out of those packets. So that's why we launched them into bottles, which are airtight, or then we launched them in pouches in Ziploc. So... and I always suggest people that putting them in an airtight container so that the aroma doesn't go away.
What challenges did you face starting and growing your business, other than coming up with a name, which took a few iterations?
Yeah, like,
looking back, what are the challenges that you ran into? And talk about that for a bit.
Every day, since day one, and many entrepreneurs will understand this, that every day is a challenge for all of us, and it's a new challenge. And when you're a small business owner, you do everything. You are the janitor of your business. You are the director of your business. You do everything. So that's exactly. And my skills are in marketing, which are really good, but I don't have skills like... when people ask me, can you reduce sodium in your curry? And I have no idea how to do that because I don't know what brings in sodium. So I know salt brings in sodium, but then salt also brings flavor. So that's why it's a very big challenge for me to understand how to do it. And that's where I need people who have food science degrees. So, but I really wish I had that degree. So that's my biggest challenge nowadays. I have learned a lot in this journey. So when people pick up from the grocery store, they don't understand. Even me, when I was picking up, going to superstore and picking up, I don't know, something like rice, I didn't know how it is reaching that grocery store. But there are so many steps involved in reaching to that grocery store, which understanding that was a very, very big challenge. It took me 2 to 3 years to understand what process it is and how difficult that system is.
Two to three years. I mean, Shivani, people spend their entire lives trying to figure that out. So that's pretty good. Shivani was asking about food science. There's some resources in your neck of the woods that she could tap into, right? That we've heard about on the podcast.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, of course there's Dalhousie with a mm-hmm. great food science department. There's also Acadia. Actually, Acadia has a small group of food scientists as well. And there's me, of course, our lab. Yeah. We look at food science. I'm an editor of a journal in food science as well. So yeah, absolutely. You have lots of resources within Nova Scotia and across the country. You have some great food science departments. I'm thinking of Laval, Guelph, Manitoba, Alberta, UBC. I mean, they all have really strong food science department doing great research.
There you go. See, I'm learning every day.
And so they would be able to advise on increasing or decreasing sodium in any of those resources, like getting right down into the product configuration.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So they do research, obviously, but also they do applied research to help companies as well. They help companies reformulate products, reformulate recipes as well. Shivani, I mean, as an entrepreneur, I'm sure we've interviewed several entrepreneurs on this podcast over the years. I'm sure you have some juicy anecdotes and stories to share with us. You've been in business for a while now. What are some of the key anecdotes you can share with our listeners?
You know, when you're into food business, and especially when you're in Indian food business, and that too in Atlantic Canada, people always ask me this question, is this spicy? And I don't have an answer to this question.
Well, yes, there's spices in it. Yeah,
because so they'll come in and there are some people who will say, oh, no, Indian food, no, it's too spicy for us. Okay. But there are some people who come in and I understand why they come in and ask me. But my tongue palate is different from yours. For me, this is not spicy at all. This is bland for me, but it might be really spicy for you. So come and try and you tell me how, if this product is spicy or not. But yeah, this has been again a very big challenge for us. And I have finally figured out an answer is I cannot make everyone happy. And the answer is, why don't you try a little bit and you tell me if it's spicy or not?
Well, so Shivani, for people who want to reach out and want to learn more about your business and products you have, where can they go to actually find information about your business and offerings?
They can always visit our website, shivaniskitchen.ca. They can always email us. Our website is getting updated because we're bringing new packaging. We're actually bringing new compostable packaging. Mm-hmm. That is what our goal is, more sustainable. So so they can always visit our website. They can go to Sobeys and ask the grocery manager, where is our product? That would be really helping us, especially I really want to talk to the listeners that yes, we brought the convenient meal solution, but it's not very conveniently placed. So you'll have to go to your local grocery manager and ask them where is Shivani's Kitchen products, and you'll be able to find it.
Well, it's congratulations. I mean, that's a long journey for anybody. Listen, for anybody, professional CPG companies to get food on the shelf of our grocers. So congratulations. Yeah. It sounds like you've got your handle on many of the moving elements in a very short amount of time. So listen, it's just been a real
Thank
treat
you.
To hear your story and congratulations on all your success so far. Wish you much continued success. And thanks for joining us on the Food Professor podcast.
Awesome. Thank you.
So news out in the New York Times, apparently the QR code is on its last legs in most restaurants. Have you heard this? So, you know, the QR code was a bit of the savior in some places. You know, there'll never be another printed menu. They'll, you know, order from a QR code. But as it turns out, as you may know, it's a pretty soulless experience to order from a QR code. Everybody takes their phone out and, you know, it worked.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever done that? Like, I remember I was at LaGuardia Airport and sitting there and I ordered from a QR. And half of me was like, does this go anywhere? So there's yep. that. But then my food showed up and it was great. I didn't mind it at all. But in many circumstances, it kind of loses. What was the quote? A window is a menu to the soul of the restaurant and a QR code has no soul. Would you agree?
The QR code has no soul. Oh, my goodness. Well, I think a lot of people just don't like QR codes.
Yeah.
But the QR code to me is data. And you transfer data. And I think, I mean, when COVID hit, people were forced to use them.
Sure.
I think now when people see QR codes, they think of COVID. I think that's what's going
that's
on.
That's an interesting point.
You know, there's a strong correlation between the event,
yes,
which nobody wants to be remembered of, and no. the technology. Oh. So that's a bit unfortunate. Perhaps at some point we'll actually move on.
Yeah.
We'll think of something else. But you know, there's the double layered code. The fact of the matter is that the code, the code that we see on products is not sufficient to contain all the data that we now need today in order to offer more transparency to the public. Mm-hmm. That's the fact. I mean, so, and I think the QR code is part of the solution, or a double layered code as well. A double layered code is also a solution. And in fact, actually, I don't know if you knew this, but the code is just celebrated its 50th anniversary just a few weeks ago.
I was a code skeptic back in the day, but it really blossomed during COVID. It's still in use in other places. But
yep.
Listen, I want to connect the first part of our episode to this part. I want to walk into a restaurant and have machine vision learning look at me and figure out what I want and have it on the table in about 5 minutes based on AI. There you go. There's a future. There's a future.
Or do somewhere. Like me, you sit down at a restaurant and you let the server decide what you're going to eat. That's what I do. I did it last night again at a Mexican restaurant, actually. Yeah.
Very good.
It was
my
daughter's birthday. So.
Well, I'd also say that you and I had the chance to eat at Alder Restaurant in the Ace Hotel in Toronto, just named one of the top restaurants in the city. So no longer a secret, if it ever was. So, you know.
That was a bit of a surprise. And you walk into a basement.
Yes.
You know, I thought I was going to get killed or something. I thought I was dinner. But anyways, it was actually a lovely experience, and we had a lovely dinner. So thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah, if you're in the Toronto area and you like architecture and great food, it's a great place to go. Last but not least, I noticed this Nigerian chef cooked for a record amount of time, setting a world record. 100 hours, setting the world record for cooking meals. Now, most chefs would call that an average day's work. Boom, boom.
Yeah.
But anyway, so kudos to her, and it's a great story. I'll include it in the show notes. All right. Well, lots going on, and that was a great episode, and it was great to meet a food entrepreneur.
I just want to salute all our friends in the beef sector. It was the Mad Cow Crisis 20th anniversary this week. And I was actually in the prairies at the time. It was devastating, but it just showed how resilient the beef industry is. And Anita Stewart started Canada Food Day back in 2003 as a result of Mad Cow.
And
it is now recognized by Parliament as an official day. So starting in August, first Saturday of August, every year, it's going to be Food Day Canada. So a salute to my late good friend, Anita Stewart, culinary artist.
Well, what a great way to wrap the episode. And we'll be back next week when we get into a bit of aquatic issues with seafood. So a little, a very interesting deeper dive or shallow dive. We'll find out which. But for now, I'm Michael LeBlanc, consultant, keynote speaker, podcaster. And you are?
I'm the food professor, Sylvain Chalabat.
And for those of you listening, be sure and tell all your friends. Listen in and tune in. And thanks for subscribing. And Sylvain, talk to you next week.
Take care.